I am 28. The 29th of April, 1981, to the 28th of April, 1982. Over. Meow, by Andrew Nielsen. The move to the north came not a moment too soon. Jackal Music seemed tired of the London bubble and wanted to start signing bands from the north. Oh, Bill, you've been up there. Have a flat and an office. The flat was basic, but had the essentials. The office likewise, for the few visits a week I did pop in. The local pub had the correct combinations of items from a bar with hand pumps, a fireplace, the quiet corner, even a piano, which went sadly untouched. As soon as things were set up, I drove the entire journey in one go, unpacked the few items I took with me, then was back out to the local bus station, leaving with one of each timetable. Next was the local shop. Basket, tea, loose Darjeeling, milk, semi-skimmed, biscuits, digestive. Then a look around the rest of the aisles. Back to the flat for a brew and a quick look through the pile of timetables. Maps joining them was the A to Z, piled with scribbles of pubs, clubs and recording studios. Down the road, the nearby pub could be heard opening up, but that would and could wait for now. Tomorrow was a trip to Sonic Studios to check up on the Best Not Mention Them's debut album. Next week, three gigs picked from the local paper, with only the one band between them that I'd heard of. Hopefully new music would be found to keep the books happy. With notes made in a fresh blue notebook, the yellow notebook checked, and the bed made, it was time for a wander around the city centre. The Best Knots debut album was the most realistic skyrock album of all time. They were in the blue book for a reason. From the pages of the yellow book, Leave Them Outfit may have violently disagreed, but that's why they were in the yellow book in the first place. They both could knock anything signed to Fatcom into a cocked hat. The Best Knots debut album's cover holds many a tale. It's well worn, and you can go and read up about it yourself. Despite reports, yours truly had no contribution or comments to make, unless you count barely managing to not spit a mouthful of tea all over the first draft, all the while hearing my own words back at me. Just go for it. Just pick an idea. Those words then become stuck in my head, staying there while showing it to Jeff back in the office, and while on the phone to London, sticking the album in a sealed paper bag was Jeff's idea. So go and ask him about that the next time you need an interview. Those words in my head were quieting down on the first visit inside the local pub, and I could tell this was to be the place for uninterrupted work on the yellow book, away from distractions from work's telephone calls and club's concentration. Pint, beer mat, sturdy table and a chair were all found. Only after checking through the yellow book for half an hour did I realise the two wolves in the cosy looking corner near the fireplace keeping watch. Not at me, just in general, as if to make sure of something. They kept to themselves, chatting about the price of meat and mostly keeping out of my way. I finally solved having my own words stuck in my head by having a clear Wednesday morning around May 1982. Up at 6 a.m. with a light breakfast while shuffling all the timetables like a pack of cards, letting the click of the kettle, the one I'd happened to hold in my left hand. That was today's work. A moment away from the guitars, pianos and growls. Bus 216 and a coin toss decided that I stay on until the final stop. Away perhaps from the chords, but the books remain close. Squeaky brakes, doors collapsing open. Change and tickets, doors collapse closed. For a moment, I remember the back page of the yellow book, filled with the lists of records to be pressed. At the top of the list is the word Daft Ideas. Near the top is for a sound effects record, but with all the usual trappings of a regular pop record. Band photo, ponderously long track titles, moody back cover art, gatefold sleeve with the full high concept treatment, maybe a sheet of stickers. The LP would contain solely the sound of a double-decker bus travelling its route from start to terminus. How long would people listen to such a record? Track one, Doors Collapse. Change in ticket. A man sits in front of me, places a brown leather bag down to the side and stares out the window. Track two, Doors Collapse. Engine roars. Indicators. Meow. Engine gears go up. Radio chatter from the depot. Track three, bus speeds up to catch the green lights at a junction. Slows near a stop. That no one sticks their hand out, so accelerates away. Meow. Track four, Doors. Meow. The man in front is looking around too and spots his bag make a small twitch. He carefully opens the brown leather bag and a small cat face appeared, slightly confused, but with the sense of purpose that all cats have. Meow. The man in front sighs and lightly closes the flap over the bag. He gets up, carefully picks up the bag and rings the bell to get off the bus. I grab the yellow book from my bag, turn to the back page and name the album. Can't Appreciate Time, with a line crossed neatly over the first word. One other thing to mention about the two wolves in the pub. All the awful jokes on the back of the Jackal Music records I dealt with were from them and are their responsibility. I got them all in exchange for a regular supply of beefsteaks and pork chops.
Under Fear of Meow Meow by Liz Meredith. I liked to walk my name, I now think. Perhaps I should have changed my name earlier. About 2 weeks before, I'd been drinking with some friends at the point where the B meets in the middle. During the evening, I had casually pulled out my knife and showed it to my friends and said that I wanted to start a revolution. Perhaps several of them. 33 1/3 seemed a good number at the time. My friends all echoed that I had said this 3 times before. Who did I think I was? The Bunny Man? On 17 May 1981, two friends went out to the bottom of the B. They came home together about 10:30 p.m. on a number 40 bus to the terminus. This was the last bus. The all-night buses were not in operation on this day. One of the friends thought it hilarious to keep screaming, "Turn up the scissors!" They arrived near to the middle of the B at 10:42 p.m. It was raining quite a bit and they shared an umbrella. They walked a short way down the back of the B, past the TSB, and then turned left into the middle of the B until they reached the screaming friend's house, where they talked for about a minute before the other headed off towards their home, where the B splits out, known locally as the Meow Meow. It was her umbrella. About 10:55 p.m, a person living at number 25, the Meow Meow, heard sounds like a scream, one after the other, possibly a whoa. At the time, she didn't pay it any attention, as she often heard sounds like that, so carried on with her painting. She was known locally as Black Betty. I had gone to the middle of the B on the evening of 17 May 1981 and I went to my friend's house. My younger brother was also there. We arrived just before 10 p.m. and the television was on. The programme Nobody's Perfect was on. I then said I was going out, even though it was raining, and left the house shutting the door behind me. My brother watched the show until the end and then went home. My friend said after around 45 minutes of me leaving, there was a knock at the door and his sister came in babbling nonsense about turning up the spoke. And then 10 or so minutes later, I knocked on again. My friend said that I seemed rather distressed, and I said that I had found a wet umbrella on the path that ran through the Meow Meow. We went out to the path where we both witnessed what I had seen. My friend said that we shouldn't hang around and that we should call 999. I asked if he meant Nick or the Peelers. I called the Peelers from the phone box at the end of the path near the bridge, as I had no cash and 999 calls were free. My friend made a statement at the Peeler station and later identified a knife produced as belonging to me. My friend also later identified a magazine that he had let me borrow several weeks before. The Peelers were called at 11:22 p.m. and when the emergency services arrived, they confirmed the outcome. Everything was wet through. I wondered what the point of an umbrella was then. Perhaps I should purchase a rain poncho instead. The day after, the 18 May at 5:45 a.m, the Peelers asked me if I had anything more to add to my statement. I said that I had seen a man in the fish and chip van at the Meow Meow Bridge at around 11 p.m. I gave them the registration of the van VAP 595W. I was sure it was a Y though. The Peelers then asked if I carried a knife, and I said I did, but that I had lost it a few weeks before. I said that it was a switchblade knife that I had had for 5 years, and I called it Slim, as I had bought it down south in Cheadle-Hume. I told them that I used it for spreading conserve on toast. Marmalade was my favourite. When the Peelers looked at my jeans, in the trouser turn-ups they found a droplet of marmalade and asked me where it had come from. I said it must be from the jar I had bought from the fish and chip van the day before. I asked what flavour it was. I showed them my right index finger, which had a missing remnant of the marmalade, where the skin joins the nail. The Peelers then took scrapings off my finger and fingernail for evidence. On 19th of May, the Peelers searched a drain with long-handled calipers by the path at the Meow Meow and found my knife in the sludge. On 22nd of May at 3:15 p.m, the Peelers went to my home where the bee begins, where they took a magazine. The Peelers said to me, "I have taken possession of a magazine from your house. I have reason to believe that it belongs to you." I said it was mine and that my friend had given it to me. The Peelers then asked if I had read it and I said I had. The Peelers then said, "In this magazine there is a story about a man who, without provocation, jumped in front of a teenaged girl on a lonely path and stabbed her 75 times. The story was on page 17 to 19 of the magazine and continued again on page 46. The magazine article was called Stabbed by Both Sides. The peelers continued, afterwards he threw the knife he used into some water so that his fingerprints would be washed off. I then said that I didn't do it. I would have shot her. I then asked if I could write a note to my brother, which I did, after which the peelers read it and reminded me that I was under caution. I wrote that I liked a song in the charts called Stand and Deliver that had been on Top of the Pops that week. I also wrote about fishing. The autopsy reported 10 stab wounds in the upper back area, one of which had severed the spinal cord. One wound had gone through the left lung and 3 had pierced the right lung and 1 had gone through the shoulder blade, whilst 5 had not gone through anything other than muscle. Both lung cavities were filled with blood. The cause of death was determined to be hemorrhage and shock from stab wounds caused by an umbrella spoke. I had been guilty, yet I was now left feeling old. I had made it through the rain, but this would affect the rest of my life. I bought a black rain poncho. But I now had to decide if to change my name, maybe just drop the B and be ill from now on. As living with umbrellas and fish and chip vans would now be challenges to overcome.